Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Up the Poshcast by the fans for the fans. It is the morning after, the evening before, where Peterborough United have lost at home 2-0 to Huddersfield Town on the opening day of the 24-25 season. Let's just lead right into it. Want to hear from all the hosts. We have Ash, John, Dell, Lods, Max, and me, Harry, today. No Charlie, the only one we don't have. And let's debrief. Are we in panic mode yet, John? What's your assessment of the game?
Yeah, I don't think panic mode is quite where I'm at, but I am increasingly concerned about where we're going to be this season. I think, let's take the good stuff first. I thought the first 30 minutes, we probably edged the game and were slightly the better team. But after that, I was very concerned with what I saw. It was very rare last season, and ultimately one of the problems with Posh this season is the barometer of what we expect has raised, because last season was so exceptional and we had such a strong team there that instantly what you're going to do is compare us to last season. And if you do that, it didn't reflect well on what we did yesterday. I mean, we ended up with less possession than the away side, which I don't remember that happening last season at all. We barely had a shot after going behind, and one of our strengths last season was coming from behind. So there are concerns, and my big concern is the whole system and whether we have the players to play it. Now, one of the issues was we came up yesterday against a team that's high press, and they pressed us, and they got their tactics spot on, because we just could not build through the phases really at all. There was a couple of moments in the first half where Curtis and Sissoko sort of exchanged passes and broke through, and Randall got in once through the lines, but ultimately we didn't see much of the passing play that we saw last season. And a big reason for that is simply because I think the two centre-backs, when you watch Ronnie Edwards play, he was so good at standing on the ball, drawing a press. He would give it out to Burrows, he'd give it into Knight, and one of them would be able to pierce a ball through that first line of press. And then all of a sudden, all our creative players like Collins, like Poku, like Randall, like Mason Clark had so much room to play. Yesterday, the natural instinct of Manny Fernandez and Wallin was if there was a player coming towards them, they would turn round, give it back to Steer, and then we'd build from the back again. And the ball would go long, or we'd give it out to Fernandez, or we'd give it out to Wallin, and it would sort of get knocked into the channel. And I include Sparks in this as well, because Sparks' distribution yesterday was nowhere near what Harrison Burrows did, right? So we lost all of that in terms of keeping the ball, which was so important to us, because it could bring an opposition team onto us before we could flip it around the other side. If we can't do that, and if we don't have the players to do that, we should not be playing a system that demands this level of ability and possession on our players. If these players aren't capable of doing it, then we have to think about changing the whole system and the whole demands on the ball with these players already, which is concerning. Now, I don't want to write it off yet, because I think George Nevitt will be an upgrade on what we have. And I think there's potential that people like Valin can, with a bit more familiarity with their team, can improve. But there are real concerns about that. And one of the biggest issues for me is Manny Fernandez. Manny didn't have a terrible game yesterday. Defensively, he was fine. And actually, he did the job that he was asked to do. But the problem is, every time it goes into him, he is so poor in possession that he can't play this system. Now, last season, we dropped Johnson Clark-Harris, right? Because he couldn't play the system. He was League One's top scorer twice. He could not play the system. Now, the club need to realise that Manny Fernandez is incapable of playing in this system. He is not ready to be third choice centre-back. He is not ready to play in a team that plays this style of possession football. If he played for Wickham, he might be fine. But he needs to go on loan now, and we need to get another centre-back in, because he cannot step into this team, and this team simply cannot play progressive football with him in the back line. And that's as simple as that. We've seen it enough now. I've seen it enough. He might become a very good defender if we change the system. Possibly. He's got all the fundamentals of being big, physical, you know. But he doesn't have the required ball playing ability to play in this system. And there's no point, you know, getting rid of Johnson Clark-Harris if you're not going to do it for a centre-back just because he's younger.
I'm glad that John's brought up that point straight off the bat, because that was the main takeaway that I took from yesterday's game. We're comparing Wallin and Fernandes to Ronnie and Knight, who are just absolutely levels above them. And we're trying to play the same way when it's clear that they can't play that way. There were so many times where I think Wallin needs some work. And he's looking across to Manny for guidance. Manny's obviously worked with Fergie for a couple of years now. And it seems like Manny doesn't really know what he's doing either. And then Steer's trying to coach Manny through the game, but Steer's passing was terrible yesterday. And it's just the three of them yesterday just did not give me any confidence whatsoever. Steer's probably just had an off day with his passing. And Wallin and Manny can learn how to play. But I think the one thing that Fergie's probably going to do after yesterday's game is scream at Dara for a centre-back. And someone that's experienced at building up from the back, not necessarily experienced at playing games, but just knowing where to be and when, and the right passes to play into midfield, so we can get the build-up play moving a bit faster. Because John's quite right, the amount of times that Manny and Wallin had the ball and just didn't do anything with it. They just held on, passed the Steer, and then Steer was stitched up a little bit. There was times where he had nothing to do, and Collins did try and help him out a lot, but there was just no options whatsoever. And I think it's the speed and the ability of the centre-backs getting that into midfield that was the issue.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of this, and I don't want to labour the point on the fact that it's hard to get the system started if the defence doesn't do what they're meant to do in terms of progressing out. To their credit, I thought our midfield was good in the first half and just laboured under the high press in the second half. Archie Collins was my man of the match yesterday, and I still gave him a 7 out of 10 in our debrief ratings that we as a podcast do together after every match. And he was pretty dynamic, good positioning, accurate with his passing. We don't really expect out of him a lot of a goal threat or that final killer ball. That's more expected on Randall or the wingers. And for that reason, I'm not really marking him down for the fact that he didn't really help out on that front largely. But yeah, credit to him. I don't think he comes away with much of a mark against his name. Sissoko in the first half, I thought his close control and some of the passes that he found were better than I think we've seen from Collins or Kipriani last season at moments. So his vision was extremely good. Whereas, of course, the system is kind of built for Collins and Kipriani to find the easier passes, and for, as it was last season, Poku and Mason Clark to do the tricky runs or dribbles out of those, you know, relatively routine, slow tempo build-ups. And it's a shame that he faded in the second half and was rightly subbed, just because he was fading out of that game. Because if we can get him playing like he did in the first half for 90 minutes, there's potentially a really, really high quality loan option here for the season. I also wonder whether he could play a bit further forward. I think he was finding those cutting passes better than Randall was. And my last player that I'll bring up, I'll just focus on the midfield for now, was, I said in the last episode that Joel Randall is going to be player of the season. I still believe that, but I gave him a 3 out of 10 for his performance yesterday. While he did find Chris Conn-Clark well on the left to set up a couple of chances, one of which ended in a shot that was right at the keeper by CCC. He totally and utterly faded in the second half and was at times without pressure, passing directly to Huddersfield players, lost all finesse to his through balls and balls over the top. There was one in the first half where he tried to find Poku. I don't know if you remember, but he tried to essentially slide it through their centre-backs to Poku, and it went straight to their keeper. And of course, he missed his chance at the edge of the box, which Hayes had set up for him, having been fouled. I'd expect him to at least hit the target in that situation, and dragging it wide summed up his performance. I really hope that he comes back from this. I would still be, we'll get on to Oxford and whether we rotate for that, but I would still like to see Randall start against Shrewsbury. I'm certainly not trying to dig him out too much in terms of who he is as a player. But yesterday he was torrid.
Can I just jump in? Because I will dig Randall out a bit here, because actually I think he's been offered a new contract. Theoretically, he's one of the high earners at the club now. The expectations for him have changed. He's no longer that little boy lost that, you know, didn't have a club and no one really expects anything. And Ferguson can say, you can have six bad games and we'll keep you in the team. He's a key player for us now. And that performance yesterday was unacceptable, completely unacceptable. It was awful. He gave the ball away every time he got it. He was ducking out of challenges. If that's what he wants to serve up, go and sit on the bench and we'll have Chris Conkart playing his actual position, because I thought it was awful. And I have my concerns with Randall that last season he was very much a system player rather than an actual brilliant player. And that actually was flattered because the system was so good and it creates space for him. And this season he needs to prove himself. We can't go back to Joel Randall of 2 years ago. He's got his new contract now. Now step up and prove that you're going to be a key man, because that's what you need to do.
Yeah, so I think that we're maybe all being a little bit harsh. Obviously, first game of the season, I know that obviously we don't normally tend to play particularly strong teams in pre-season, which is maybe where we get a little bit of false hope from. But I do think that we are being slightly harsh in that if we flip back to last season, we played Derby at home in like our second or third home game, and we lost 4-2 to them. Now, they're a team that got promoted. Realistically, after that, I think that we're all relatively confident to say that Huddersfield are going to be well up there. And they've got a good manager that's got probably just as much League One knowledge as Ferguson does. I think that obviously there was some disappointments across the pitch, but to sort of single out players as being awful seems a little bit harsh for the first game of the season. We lost 2-0 to a good team. Like, ultimately, if we score one or two of the chances, obviously, so Ricky goes through, he drags his shot just wide, which I'm sure that we all acknowledge was an improvement of what it would have been previously. And then Con Clark had two opportunities, one which was mentioned that was played through by Randa, and then there was a header at the back post. I think if we take one or both of those, then it's a completely different game. Huddersfield come out even further, and ultimately the second half was boring, is because Huddersfield were happy to just sit back and let us sort of move the ball around behind their press. But I'm not sure that it was as bad as people make it. Is that fine margins is how I would like to see it. And if we'd have got the goal early on, I know that that's very easy to say, if we'd have got the goal that we needed first, then I'm sure it would have been a different game. So I'm not too concerned at the moment. As for Manny, I thought that ultimately, like, they've scored a deflected goal, but I don't really think he did. He made one bad pass. That's all I'm going to say. And I get that you're saying that he's not right for the system, but I don't think that he was as bad as people are making out. Similar with Randall.
You know, I've been sitting here quiet in the background, which has been really, really hard to do. But listening to most of you negative, positive, to be fair, my view on it is, now obviously people know that I criticise Manny and I criticise Ricky. I actually thought Manny done what he had to do yesterday as a defender. Yeah, he's not in the league of Knight or Edwards, but he defended well. He kept the ball out of the net. You can't criticise him for the two goals, I don't think. But as far as defending goes, he's done very well. And I actually rated him quite high for me. After the first, I put a tweet out about 30 minutes. I thought we played really, really well. So there were signs to see that we can play well. It was encouraging to watch. We was breaking really quickly. And then, obviously, once they got their first goal is when it sort of ended a bit. We sort of got a bit, well, how do you explain it? We shit ourselves, right? We sort of stopped doing what we was doing in the first 15, 20, 25 minutes. And then we just sort of seemed like we panicked a little bit, which is, basically the same as what happened at the start of last year. As we grew into the season, we got better and better and better. And, whilst it was disappointing to lose 2-0, whilst it was disappointing to see the second half performance, which was, it was not great. I think you've got to take the positives after the first game is that, yeah, the first half hour, I was really impressed. And if some of, you know, if some of that can sort of continue into the season and improve, then I think we'll be fine. Still don't think Manny's going to be the answer to our centre-backs. I can't wait for Neville to come back. I know in pre-season it's totally different, but some of his passing reminded me very much of Edwards and what we were saying about him like getting the drawing the attacker in and then making a space, passing it forward rather than back. Disappointed in Steer, if I'm honest. I did make one or two good saves in the second half, I believe, but his kicking was just, I've never seen it so bad. Reminded me of back in the day, who is it? Yeah, there's many rubbish keepers we had. Joe Neenan, for example, or Grimnick, you know, just couldn't kick a ball for shit. What are you laughing at? Sorry, some of these boys won't remember that. Yeah,
I'm just showing my age, that's all.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But overall, I thought we, a game of two halves, as they say. First half, I thought we played very well. Second half, not great. Just to add on to Ricky as well. Still don't think he's a footballer, but he done a couple of good moves yesterday. He, you know, the shot that he had when he created his own space on his left foot. Normally, that would have like been fucking miles away, but, you know, I thought he tried. I thought he done okay. But yeah, overall, my weaknesses was, I'm going to go for Steer was probably my biggest weakness, if I'm honest.
I think I gave Ricky the highest rating when we did the ratings. I don't think technically he was great, but I don't think as a striker, he didn't get any service, did he? I don't remember many chances where he got a decent pass anywhere around the box. I thought his pressing was absolutely fine for the first hour, at least. And that chance that he missed was a chance that only he could have created himself. There's no other player in our squad that could have had that opportunity because he made it himself. The one thing I would say is he probably should have been subbed off, but Fergie's substitutions were a bit wild. I'm sure we're going to come on to that. I think he's probably got them completely wrong, if I'm being honest.
I just want to sort of wrap around to what Del said about steering. That I know that I made a prediction that it was going to be Bilo as number one by the end of the season, but I do think that Bilo does slightly better with both of those chances yesterday. The deflection for the first one, yes, it is a wicked deflection, but I've only watched one angle, but I do think that it went over his head and that maybe Bilo would have got a hand to it. And then the second one, he's got his hand to it and it's still gone in the back of the net, which ultimately I'm sure that he'll be really frustrated with. I think that there's a chance that, like Del said, is that it felt like we huffed and puffed for 30 minutes and we were really good, like really entertaining. And then it sort of got to a point where there was one chance that, I can't remember what happened, but all of a sudden Poku's hands were on his knees. It looked like he was out of breath. Sissoko's hands were on his knees. He looked like he was out of breath. And it looked like we had huffed and puffed for 30 minutes and then they scored and our bubble burst massively. Like Lods mentioned, the subs yesterday, it felt like they sort of didn't know what they were doing and that they'd been brought on and weren't really clear of what the system was. But there were some good performances from the subs, which I'm sure that somebody else will dig into. But I think that, like Lods said, I think that we got them wrong yesterday, potentially.
On the substitutes, I'm actually going to disagree with Ash. I thought we got the personnel right. I just thought tactically we got them wrong in positions. I thought we made the right substitutions in terms of who you'd want to see. You know, maybe not Ajiboy, but, you know, we brought Hayes on, who we know can be really technical and can light up a game. We brought Malik on, who can do the same sort of thing. We brought O'Brien Brady on to switch up that personnel in midfield. But I just thought the first substitution when Ajiboy came on, I thought was rushed. And we seem to have played this back three. I don't think Poku really knew what he was doing because Manny Fernandez was really overexposed and Poku wasn't tracking back. And in the end, we abandoned it relatively quickly and went back to the a flat four with Adjibor on his preferred side. And I thought then we played a little bit better. But it seemed like he didn't get the subs wrong, so to speak. But the tactics of where the individual subs were playing, I thought, could have been better. And maybe for who they were taken off for. I will talk about Hayes, though, because I think he was a standout performer out of those substitutes. I thought he was really, really good. And he's impressed me all pre-season. He is that player who will bring some sort of flair and bring some energy to a game after it goes flat. Because the game had run flat. We've already discussed all of a sudden how the energy was sort of like, seeped out of us and we lost all of it after 30 minutes. So bringing on that substitution brought some energy back to the side, and he was really direct, which I really quite like, because in that midfield pocket, sometimes I feel like Randall can faff about a little bit and take a little while to make up his mind. Hayes sort of knows what he wants to do as soon as he picks up the ball. So I thought, I was really impressed by him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him cameo in more games and bring that same sort of energy. But I don't think the subs were necessarily wrong, but I just think it was one of those games that no matter what Darren Ferguson changed, no matter how he tried to change it, I think the outcome was always the same, because that first 11 lost a lot of their energy 30 minutes in.
Yeah, so on the subs, I was quite surprised to see that JD wasn't on the bench, Dornelli. And I did make this point on a previous recording we did, that unfortunately we had to re-record and then I wasn't available for the re-record. When we signed Curtis, I was a bit disappointed that we'd signed a player with not much experience, because I thought the idea was that Dornelli was going to be developed into our first choice right back next season. So if we were going to get a right back in, it would be an experienced right back that he could learn from. And we signed Curtis, and I know he had a good reputation from the Sheffield United youth team. And yesterday's performance wasn't great from him, but I'm sure he is a good right back. But then to see Dornelli just not on the bench at all and Adjibor preferred, I'm not saying that Adjibor had a negative effect on the game. I thought he did okay. But I was a bit confused by that to begin with. Then I was surprised that I weren't surprised that Con Clark had come off. But he would have been the natural replacement for Randall, who I thought probably should have been hooked. So we didn't have that replacement. It would have been too much of an ask of O'Brien Brady to play that role, I think. And there would have been no one else to play in midfield behind him. And then the other thing that really confused me was playing Mothersill on the wing with Ricky still up front. I just mentioned before about how Ricky looks tired and he couldn't press anymore. And we had Odo on the bench who didn't get a look in. I'm very, very confused as to what was going on. Max mentioned formation changes as well. The players did not look comfortable whatsoever with all the changes. We don't know what goes on in the training sessions. So whether they work on the formation changes or not, I'm not sure. But it didn't look great watching yesterday.
Yeah, it is a tough one. Like Max said, Hayes was really good. And was Hayes really good because he was in a position that was natural to him and the position that he likes to play on the pitch? I think that O'Brien Brady coming on in that game, I know that they said Sissoko was potentially 60 minutes max just because he was getting up to speed with things. That was a really difficult game for O'Brien Brady to come into. I'm not going to say that he was bad as a result of that, because Huddersfield were a big team and he is slight to say the least. Now, don't get me wrong, he's obviously a good footballer, but he still has got some learning to do in that position. So for him to be brought in under that sort of pressure and expected to change the game felt a little bit harsh. Like Lod said, Adjibor coming on over Odo and then also being on the bench over Dornelli sort of felt wrong. It's like, where does our trust lie? We've got a transfer listed player on the bench. Now, if we don't want him, I'm not saying that we exclude him, but surely we're just accepting that he's better than what we've got, which again then raises concerns about what we've got in the building. As for Mothersill, yes, I do agree he should have been brought on as the striker. I do think that Ricky should have been moved out to the left or potentially replaced by somebody like Otto, but I don't think that Malik showed the intent and desire now, whether that's because he's sort of thrown a strop. I don't know. I don't want to put words into anybody's mouths because he's been put out on the left and he wants to be the main man, like he said in previous interviews. It just didn't seem right that, like, I expect the subs, you've sort of got 25 minutes, don't you, to sort of bust a gut. And I'd expect them to sort of be leaving the pitch in the same condition that the guys that have played 90. You know that you've got 25 minutes. Hayes was fantastic because he was running at tired legs, similar to what we sort of saw from Adjaboy last season. But it just felt like Malik wasn't really switched into it, whether that was because he was pissed off or whatever. But ultimately, it's a squad game. There's 46 games in a season, 45 more to go for Posh. So everybody's going to play their part like they did last season. So hopefully, if there was any attitude issues, hopefully they're not carried on. And like I said, I don't want to say that there was an attitude issue because I didn't see it, but it just didn't feel like the work rate was quite there for me.
You know, I just want to sort of wrap it up with the subs side of things. I actually thought we looked extremely messy, if that makes sense. When the subs are happening, it was just... I felt like we was panicking. Oh, let's put this. We changed formation. We changed the system so many times with the subs, and the players just didn't know what they was doing. As you just alluded to there, putting Malik on the left and leaving Ricky up front, it made sense to swap him over, put Malik in his right position. But overall, I just think, me personally, I thought the subs were maybe the right personnel, but putting them into the wrong sort of position, and it looked messy. It just didn't feel that it was a natural progression or a natural change. Does that make sense? And I think I need to, if I'm honest, I think I need to pick Fergie up on that, because I don't think necessarily he got them substitutions right, as in where to play them on a what system to play them in. He made the right people, but put them in the wrong places, in my opinion. I sort of got a say on the matter, but there we go. And also, right, there is one last thing. If you are watching on YouTube, you can actually see our individual results for each player on the screen, and we'll also be tweeting them soon, in case somebody forgets to say that.
Thank you, Dale. Exactly. And actually, it's a good way for me to just wrap up. I won't go through player by player, and please do watch on YouTube to be able to see our ratings by podcast host and obviously a podcast average. But our top player was Kean Hayes, but we're not going to give him man of the match because he didn't start, or at least didn't play long enough to get that. So our man of the match is Ricky J. Jones across the pod, getting an average of just over 6.4, with our worst performer as a podcast being Joel Randall for today. Let's hope he bounces back. I do not want to be wrong about my prediction of him being player of the season, which I still fully believe he will be. I think that's it, gents, on the game. Just, it might be worth commenting, seeing as it's the first game back at London Road this season, about the experience around the ground. I know that the club's focused on trying to put together a new fan zone and also just try to create a bit more of a positive atmosphere in the GH display that doesn't involve essentially a load of bad behaviour. And hopefully we will get it back in full later in the year. But yeah, let's hear about the fan zone just to start with. And Del, I mean, what did you think? Or if not the fan zone, what did you think about the experience of the ground as a whole?
Okay, so I can only go on hearsay from various different people. I personally didn't actually go in the fan zone. I've seen the fan zone, obviously, in action. It looked very busy, if I'm honest. I think the screen was a bit of a success. Feedback I've heard from the actual fan zone itself was the price of the product, and also the fact there was no toilets, which is actually quite a important important thing. You know, you've got all these people in there, where they're going to go. You've also got the rewards. I'm going to bring it up, but you've got the rewards where I believe you can get 100 points if you get into the ground an hour early. Okay, but then they're encouraging people to go to the van zone. So what's what do they want you to do? Get in the ground early for 100 points or go to the fun zone and spend like 6.50 or whatever it is on a pint and £8 on a burger or however much it is. So I think they need to sort of work that out. From the actual, obviously, I'm going London Road, which had more fans in than we had home fans in the GH, I just need to point out. The queues were horrendous, absolutely horrendous. I tried getting a cup of tea, I give up because the queues are worse than whatever it ever has been. Hopefully it's teething. Hopefully they'll get improving. If I'm honest, I think one of the reasons it was so slow is because you now got beer on draft and it was taking longer for everybody to pull a pint rather than just take a lid off a bottle. Maybe that needs to be addressed. Maybe they should have some pints pre-pulled ready for half time, but I thought the queues were horrendous. Whilst, again, I wasn't eating, looking at the menu, they used to have some deals. You buy a hot drink and a pie for whatever it was. There's no deals now. So it actually works out even more expensive. So didn't really hear too many good compliments about the food. A few compliments about having some beer on tap, which was quite handy in London Road. But I think overall, there's work to be done.
I didn't go in the fan zone either, and I'm not one that normally buys food and drinks at football grounds, so I can't really comment on price increases. But I did walk past the fan zone, it must have been about 14 minutes before kickoff, and it was absolutely rammed, and that can only be taken as a positive, especially if the prices are high, like people are saying. If all of them people are buying food and drinks in the fan zone, that's just more money going into the club. And if they can keep that up for every game, that is such a good money earner that just did not exist a couple of years ago. I did notice there was a lot of Huddersfield fans in there as well, lots of blue and white striped shirts. So obviously the away fans felt welcome, which is very important. And the screen, I saw pictures of it and I was concerned that it wasn't a high quality to be watching football games on it, but I was very impressed with the quality of the screen as well. Walked past through the car park, I could see the score of the Community Shield game. So I would have gone in had I had nothing to do, and it wasn't absolutely packed. So I can only take it as a positive. I don't think we need to be moaning about food and drink prices at all. It's a football ground. You shouldn't really be expecting to pay Wetherspoons prices.
Yeah, and I want to just take a moment just to say the club's got to do what it can to try and increase its revenues, and doing that through actually creating a new experience for fans is a really good thing, I think. Of course, the prices have gone up around the ground. Yes, it's either 5.50 or 6.50 for a pint of Madry in the GH display? I'm not sure, but it's expensive. But then again, It all goes to the top line, and the more revenue we have, the higher wages we can pay players. And it's not like we're the sort of club who's charging £35 a ticket to get in, as I think we're going to find Birmingham City charge when we go there on away day. But yeah, also one thing I wanted to say as well is that, you know, I've seen on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, that the club is listening to people's concerns about the fact that there weren't toilets or that there were some welfare issues, or that the queues were too long in London Road End. I do think we have a very responsive team at the club, despite, you know, little gripes that some of the podcast hosts here have with them occasionally on social media. They are very engaged and they do try and listen, and credit to them for immediately when people were commenting on some of these issues, which are teething problems, I think, that they were getting straight back on it, saying that they're going to do something about it.
Just closing up on that again is, obviously most of us didn't actually go to the fan zone, but this is some of the questions that have been dropped into our DMs. You know, what do we think about the fan zone? So we'll answer your questions as well as we can from the feedback we've got. So if you have got any more questions, anything you'd like us to discuss on our show, just drop us a message, drop us a DM, go into our personal personal Twitter accounts, whatever you want to do, and we'll do our best to answer. We'll do a bit of research if we can, and come back to you. All right.
Yeah. So, like a common theme here, I also didn't use the fan zone. I like to get in nice and early and sit down, watch the warm ups, try and learn a little bit about sort of coaching. But to get to my seat, I have to go through the fan zone. So I can see how busy it was. I think that we're very quickly going to outgrow it, which is fantastic for the club. My only gripe with it is its location. Now, I get that it's within that fenced area that we have by the club, but if you look at the things that are there, we've got the fan zone, we've got ticket collections, we've got the ticket office, we've got turnstiles, and then you've then got all of the other vendors. So there's too much going on for my liking. It does make it very much a, you've sort of got to barge your way through and snowplow through everybody, which is not great when, like, I'm bringing Imogen with me, I'm having to drag her through a crowd of people. Now, I get that that's a football experience, but is there potentially a better location that Posh would have available to them? Let's say behind the GH, sort of, if there's a big car park there. Now, I know that those spaces potentially aren't used at the weekend. Can we move it to the back there so that then everything has got its own section? I know that I had some food before the Notts County game in the ground. And it didn't feel like it was the same food that I had yesterday. The chicken balti pie was not a pucker pie that I had yesterday. It was a piglet pie, I think it was. And it was fantastic. Like you said, it's difficult because you know that people, you have to pay the prices once you're in the ground type thing. But it does feel like maybe they're a little bit too far. Now, that could be like 10p, 20p less. Yes, it all goes to the top line, but at the same time, I don't think we should be shafting fans because they've got no other option. We promote people coming to the club early. We want them there early. All of those sorts of things, like Dale's mentioned, 100 points for being in the ground. That's then a sacrifice if I'm then having to pay, let's say, 15 quid for me and Imogen to have a pie and a drink before the game. But overall, the food was much better. That gets a big thumbs up from me.
All right. So onwards and upwards for the around the ground experience as the season goes on, hopefully. Let's move on. Coming up this week, we have two games. On Tuesday night, Peterborough United are away at Oxford United in the first round of the League One Cup. I know that we were all delighted to see that we have Oxford away again. And so soon after what was such a wonderful two experiences towards the back of last season. And finally, or rather on Saturday at 12:30 p.m., we are away at Shrewsbury. I want to send it to Max. Tell me, what's your preview, sir, for Oxford away?
With Oxford, I think we need to try something new. I think we need to experiment around our squad and our numbers and rotate. I think rotation is needed. I don't think we need to go in as a full 11. I will say that if we're going to play this style of football, this progressive sort of passing out the back, building up sort of football, I think we need to keep our back line the same, just so that they get an extra 90 minutes or however many minutes they're going to play in the tank, more experience for them. And while it needs to adjust to the English league, I think that was made clear against Huddersfield. But, you know, I wouldn't mind some personnel sort of changes and experimenting with players in different positions. I'd like to see Hayes start. I think Ado should start. I want to see Malik in the number nine or up front for us. I'd like to see Con Clark in his actual position. So I think we should experiment with different players in different areas, just because I don't really know if, with all the new faces we've got in, if Ferguson knows his full strength 11, because looking at Hayes yesterday, I don't know whether even I know what our full strength 11 is. So I think some experimentation with varying different players would be good. And we know what Oxford are going to do. We've seen it, you know, four times last season even. So we know what they're going to do. And they looked amazing against Norwich on their opening day. So we know it's going to be a challenge. We know it's going to be a test. So experimenting with those players and you know, going for it in the best way that we can will be really interesting to see. But I definitely don't think starting for 11 or the 11 that started against Huddersfield is going to make any sense.
So you mentioned, Max, about keeping consistency in the defence, even if you change things around. I think the only player I would like to see come in, because I agree with you largely, is that I'd like to see Bilakapic play on Tuesday night. Yeah, okay, we've already covered. Steer did not play well against Huddersfield, but I don't think any of us are seriously talking about dropping him for Shrewsbury. Now, with that being said, let's get Billow in for this League Cup game just to give him a early season chance to show what he can do. Has he kicked on during pre-season? In my opinion, he was always a very good shot stopper and part of his issue was distribution. So let's give him a chance against a good side who are probably going to press him as well to see if his distribution has improved in the off-season. And it's a bit of a free hit. I don't think when you come up against a champ, you know, they are fundamentally now a championship side, right? Goes without saying. You come against them away in the League Cup. No one's going into that game expecting us to win it, even if we do play a full strength 11. So we may as well do a bit of rotation. I'm completely with you there.
I really want Billow to start. I don't think he's a bad goalkeeper. I think he gets a lot of criticism very unfairly. If he was the goalkeeper yesterday and had the same performance as Steer, I'm sure there would have been an absolute outrage. I don't think Steer did anything yesterday that Billow couldn't do. He caught a few crosses, which Billow can do, and the saves that Steer made were so routine that I think most average goalkeepers could do. There's an argument to say that Billow might have reached a couple of the goals. He is a lot longer than him. His arms are longer. Ashley had the crazy shout of Billow being the number one goalkeeper by the end of the season. I don't think it's that crazy looking at what Steer did yesterday. If he puts in another few of those performances, I don't think there's any reason why we wouldn't put Billow back in. And if he has a good game against Oxford, he could even start at Shrewsbury, I think. Steer's obviously the number one, but I'm interested to see what Fergie said to Billow regarding game time, because Billow can't go from number one last season to just not playing this season. There must be a way of Billow getting in. And if Steer plays like he did yesterday, I think it will happen sooner rather than later.
Look, I don't think there's any argument that Billow should come in after one game of the season to change a goalkeeper. It's just way too radical. You've got to stick with Steer for now. I actually think we're maybe being a little bit harsh on Steer. Yes, he wasn't great. And maybe with the second goal, I think he could have done better. But the first takes a big deflection, goes over him. I don't think he could have done too much else with it, to be honest. And his distribution wasn't amazing, but I didn't think he didn't give an Oxford player a chance through an Oxford player, Huddersfield player a chance through his own bad passage. You know, he was okay, but you know what you're going to get with Steer. I think that was a Steer performance. He's not going to make these wonder saves, but he does everything kind of solidly. I don't think that's a good shout, Lods. I don't think changing goalkeeper after one game of the season is a particularly good idea, to be honest. I think you've got to trust Steer. I'm pretty open to Bilakapic or Steer playing on Tuesday night. I'm not particularly bothered which one they pick. If Fergie wants to ground the defence a little bit more and keep Steer in there with an inexperienced back line so they get a bit more partnerships, then that's fine. If he wants to give Bilakapic a go just to get him a little bit more experience, that's fine too. In terms of the rest of the team, I think I agree with what Max said, really. I'd rotate a little bit, but I wouldn't. Before the game, I was thinking, let's just change the squad and let's have a look at all the fringe players. But what I saw at Huddersfield was fairly concerning and looked like a team that was a little bit undercooked and a little bit learning the system. So I think they need as many 90 minutes as they can get together. So as much as, you know, they're fit enough, if the players don't have injury concerns and things like that, I would keep the team pretty strong. Hayes is probably the one I'd bring in. I think I'd play Con Clark again because he looks like he needs to get up to speed the level a little bit. So I'd probably bring him in. I think Mothersill should start instead of Ricky up front. I agree with you on that, guys. And other than that, I would probably keep the team pretty similar to what started on the first day of the season, because I just think they need to learn the passages of play a lot more.
So I agree that Billow is the change for Tuesday, because you've got to keep the goalkeepers active whenever you can. My only concern is that if we don't change the back four, we've acknowledged that they're not the best at playing out from the back. Now, I just think it's going to end up being one of those ones where we throw Billow under the bus again. in that all it takes is one bad pass to Collins, one bad pass to Wallin or Fernandez, and then he's getting hammered for it again. Now, I'm not saying that he shouldn't be able to cope with that and cope with that pressure and that demand, but if we're going to focus energies, like Lodge said, if that's Bilo yesterday, he gets berated for it. And we're probably all the same in giving him lower scores than Steer got. I think Steer ended up as a 5 average yesterday. Bilo would have got less than that because people would have naturally given him a lower rating because he's Bilo and he can't play out from the back. So that would be my only concern. I think that Randall probably gets dropped and Con Clark moves into the middle, like John mentioned. And then hopefully let's see some of the more direct players in Otto and Hayes. But all in all, I like a trip to Oxford. Side away end, Frankie and Benny's. It whether we win or lose, like it will be nice. And then you've also got the added factor of Peter Chioso. So it will be nice to sort of, they never really felt like there was a goodbye had after the Derby game, as he sort of just got recalled. So it will be nice to potentially give him a little clap. Not sure about people suggesting that we sing his name. That's a no from me. He's not our footballer. But if he does come over and acknowledge the fans, I think it would be right if we all gave him a little round of applause just to say thank you for those 4 months that he was with us, because we were very good. And his last game, again, hate to mention it, was that fantastic day at the start of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that bit about Chioso. I'm not going to sort of sing his name, but I'll give him a bit of a clap. I'm actually agreeing with John quite a lot here. I would probably stick with the nucleus of the main team because it's early in the season. Okay. It wasn't particularly great second half yesterday. And if we want this team to get better and play against Shrewsbury, we need to get that consistency. So I would probably stick with the most of the players. I would probably be inclined with moving Con Clark into Randall's position. That's probably about it, if I'm honest. And also, based on the fact that, as Harry's alluded to, Oxford are now a championship club, they're going to be fighting for their life to stay in the championship. They're not going to be playing their strongest players for every game. Their priority is staying in. They couldn't give a shit about the cups. So I believe they would be playing a weakened team. It could, like, obviously go two ways for us, backfire, but I think we should play the strongest team and I think we should go out and try and win the game. Not by, like, doing any subs. I wouldn't play Bilo. I'd leave Steer in because, you know, what's that going to do to his confidence as well? Shut up. I would...
One second. This is a 31-year-old goalkeeper. If he's having issues with his confidence, then he's got a real problem, which then shows why he's been a number two for his whole career. I'm not talking about confidence at all this season with Jed Steer, because he's 31 years old. If he can't back himself and ply his trade correctly, then that's completely on him, nobody else.
Okay, I'll give you that then. But perhaps he needs to stop doing podcasts if he can't perform on the fucking pitch. Anyway, little dig there, but we'll move on. So now I would stick to most of the same team. I'm looking forward to it. I know a few people saying, oh, I ain't going back to Oxford, I've got bad memories from last season. I'll fucking grow up, right? It's a game of football. We got beat twice. You know, we could say that about every single ground we've been to in our lives, you know? Oh, we've had a bad memory there. Just get off your arses. It's only a tenner a ticket. Parking, you can always park for free. It ain't going to be that hard getting out. There ain't going to be that many people there. So, stick to the same team and I'll see you all Tuesday.
All right, then. I think that nicely wraps up Oxford. I mean, I will be there. I'm looking forward to it. Although long-time listeners of the pod know that I only live 35 minutes away, so it's pretty much a home game for me. We're not going to do score predictions for the Oxford game just because, as we kind of alluded to, it's too hard to assess what the squad's going to be like. But we will do one in a moment for Shrewsbury after we've previewed that as well. John, I mean, I'm looking at the Shrewsbury game and I'm thinking, if we can hold our own against Huddersfield largely with two disappointing goals conceded from not really open play, then I'd like to think we'd still do well against Shrewsbury, right, with the nucleus of this same team that we had on Saturday.
I'll be honest, I think it's already looking like a pretty big game for Posh. I think when we went there last season, we obviously just about edged the game, but on the pattern of play, we absolutely dominated the game, and it should have been a far greater victory than a 2-1. They obviously scored that cross in horrible conditions, and then we managed to come back, but we completely dominated the game. Now, for me, Shrewsbury are going to be a team that's going to be down battling relegation. I might be proven wrong on that, but I don't think they have a great amount of quality. So if we're going to be up there and if we're going to be a playoff team, we need to go there and we need to assert our dominance on them. And we need to see a lot more sort of attacking impetus than we saw against Huddersfield at the weekend. Now, you've got the excuse of Huddersfield of being a very, very good team, and they're probably going to be up there, right? But Shrewsbury are a team we should have greater quality than. So I want us keeping the ball. I want to make sure that we show them passing transitions that we showed last season. It was so good to watch. I want us to have 70% possession. We need to start dominating this game. And it's important, because if we go and lose that and we lose Tuesday night, you know the Posh fan base is going to be in meltdown. So it's already got that feel of quite an important game for me. And I think we need to see some signs of positivity. I've been fairly negative and concerned about what I saw against Huddersfield, but that's not me writing Posh off at all. We've only had one game, and the first 30 minutes were good. But we do need to start seeing some signs that, you know, we're a good team and we should be going to Shrewsbury and winning.
Yeah, based on yesterday's performance, Huddersfield had a game plan and they executed it very, very well. They nullified our ability to play, and you could see the experience showed. They knew where to be and when. I don't think there's many teams in League One that will play like that, and I don't think Shrewsbury will play like that. So if we're going to go into every game trying to play the same way like we did last season, Shrewsbury should be a team that we win. That said, we did have a slow start last season as the players got used to playing with each other. I wouldn't be surprised if this is similar, and I wouldn't be too worried if it is. But I would expect us to play nice, attractive football like we did last season, and some of these creative players and energetic players to really shine a lot more than what they did yesterday against Huddersfield.
I think we'll spank them. I don't think they're very good. They haven't been for the last few seasons. They've lost to Stevenage yesterday. I think that we know that their pitch is small, but I actually think that might help us a little bit in terms of being maybe a little bit under the cosh at the back. I think that the channels, we ran the channels. If I think back to, we played them sort of two seasons ago in the Cup and the League, and then we then obviously went there last year as well, in that we lost in the Cup, but we won in the League. We then won last season in the League. I think that we know how it's going to be there. I don't think they're very good. I'll go out and say that. I think that this will be the game that puts the confidence into the players. I don't want to look back to Oxford or look forward and back to Oxford. I don't think we win that personally myself, but I think that you brush that aside. Again, we're not focused on the Cup. The BSM is obviously completely different, but I think that we'll steamroll them, and it will be one of those ones that people go, oh, okay, they had an off week last week against a promotion rival. They're back and they do mean business now.
I noticed that Shrews didn't really get into the game against Stevenage at all. I think it's either one shot or two shot, only one on target. They've got a couple of good names, you know, Marquise, who's obviously done pretty well at this level. I've always quite liked Malvin Benning, the left back. I thought that he could potentially have been a signing for us. I think he's a bit old now. I think Enciala is an all right centre back, but I agree. But then of course, whenever you predict a win as being a certainty and it doesn't happen, then you end up in the situation that John was describing, and everyone started to panic, especially if we also lose against Oxford on Tuesday. With that being said, I feel fairly confident that we will be fine. And it was fine margins against Huddersfield. As long as we get a goal against Shrewsbury, we will be fine. Plus, we also came back last season there. And it's, you know, Ricky causes too many problems for teams like that, even on small pitches, as you mentioned, Nash.
You know,
based on the fact it's Shrewsbury, I think on paper we should be winning these sort of games. Nobody really expected us to win against Huddersfield, if I'm honest. Even though I put down a 4-2 or whatever it was prediction, that was more in like my head rather than my heart rather than my head. I actually think we will win. Not sure whether we'll be comfortable or not, but I think we will win. Shrewsbury ain't all that great. There should be no reason why we shouldn't go there and perform and get the result we require. I just hope we play like we did the first half hour rather than we did for the second half. So, yeah, looking forward to it. Don't mind it. Also really easy to park again. £6 if anybody's interested. And, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and sort of to echo Dale's point there, you know, I agree completely. I don't think anybody really in their heads thought we'll comfortably go and beat Huddersfield. I think people probably thought that it was a possibility, but I don't think if you asked anyone to say honestly, do you think we'll go and you know, beat them? I don't think anybody would have said wholeheartedly, yes, it's going to be easy. So Shrewsbury will make it difficult. They always do. Last season it was 5 margins. I'm not really expecting the same this time around, but I think it is going to be a bit scrappy. And in terms of like the squad, you know, it's going to be a good challenge to see us play these sort of teams, you know, Shrewsbury and then Exeter, to play these sort of teams, because we, as people have already said, you know, we've lost that nucleus. You know, this is a brand new back four. We don't know if Kipriano is going to be fit. I think he's 50-50. So we are going to be missing some key players. It's going to be interesting to see how we persevere with that, and hopefully we can play like we did and that entertaining style of football that we saw in the first half an hour. But nothing's guaranteed. But what I will say is, and I think we've all sort of said it in a summary over the podcast, is this team needs time. If you look at last season, I think we won the opening day and then went on a 4-loss streak for winning again. So I think, you know, this team needs time. It's new personnel, it's a new new back line. It needs time. I don't think we need to go into mass panic, even if we lose against Shrewsbury, which I don't think we will. But even if we lose, I don't think we need mass panic. It's way too early. It's a long old season. Anything can happen. And yeah, I think we just need to wait and wait and see what happens.
All right, I think we're there. It would be good to get some score predictions in for Shrewsbury game. I'm going to call out people just to get to go around.
Can we just acknowledge the third kick, because they've done the full video on it now? I don't know whether you can see that.
So this is breaking news. As we've been recording this podcast, they have released the third kit. Are we wearing it at Oxford?
Yeah, I believe we are. Yeah, I believe we will do. Because obviously the pristine colour will be too.
Ash, can you describe it in 20 seconds for those on Spotify?
So it's black. It's got a little bit of like brickwork patterning on the right shoulder and the lower left. And then the sponsor is a purple through to blue sort of like color merge.
Iridescent.
Yes, that's the word. Not holographic.
Iridescent.
As per previous predictions. But do you know what? It's a belter. That's even, you can see John's face there. It's an absolute belter. And this will be a classic that goes down in the history books when we win the league and we win the Bristol Street Motors again this season.
I was thinking, I've done £160 on kits this season, but I think I might be doing another £50. That is blinding. It's really nice.
It does look very good, having just seen it for the first time. All right, Shrewsbury predictions. Max, give me your score, please, for the Shrewsbury game.
I think it'll be 2-0. I think it'll be scrappy in the first half. I think we'll get the job done. So I'm going to go 2-0. If you want my first goal scorer, I will say Ricky J. Sure. Jones.
Okay, 2-0 for Max with Ricky J. Jones, first goal scorer. Lods?
I don't think we're going to keep a clean sheet. I think there's going to be quite a lot of goals. It will be a comfortable game for us, but the scoreline might not reflect that. So I'm going to go 3-2 to Posh.
Got a first goal scorer for us, Lods?
Bilo.
Ash, what's your score?
I'm going to go 4-0. I think it's going to be comfortable. And I'm not sure. So correct me if I'm wrong. Is Nevitt back for next Saturday or not, do we think? If Nevitt's not back, Manny Fernandez is going to be the first goal scorer from a corner.
John, who is your... Oh, I keep saying who, because Max introduced the first goal scorers. John, what is your prediction for the score for Shrewsbury?
I'm going to echo Max, 2-0. I think Shrewsbury were pretty heavily reliant on set pieces last season to score their goals. We're now fairly well equipped to deal with set pieces, certainly better than last season. So I can see us keeping a clean sheet. I think we'll have too much quality for them. First goal scorer, Chris Conclark.
And Dale.
Right, I'm going 4-2. I was going to go 3-2, but I want to be different at Lodz. So 4-2, and I think our first goal scorer will be Conclark.
So that's everyone predicting a posh win, is it, out of you five? Did I get that right? Okay, just to be, you know, it's important for all podcasts to have a bit of foil to them and a bit of separation among the views of the hosts. I'll go with 2-2, even though I don't really mean it.
Desmond.
Yeah, Desmond, exactly. All right, thank you everyone for listening. This is our first one with the season started, so please give us your feedback. Let us know what you want us to talk about outside of the games, which are clearly going to come up every single time, and the previews for the ones coming up. But yeah, thank you for listening. Up the posh.
Up the posh.
Up the posh.
Up the posh.
Awesome. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Whose fucking idea was it to do an 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning recording?